So our focus this morning is wise concentration from the Eightfold Path. It's called Samadhi in Pali. It's the eighth and last factor in the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path, and this is December, and so we're finishing the Four Noble Truths this month and the Eightfold Path. This last Monday night at Seattle Insights, the Seattle Insights sit, a Sangha member asked Susan Lindell, who were teaching, what is the difference between concentration and mindfulness? I think that is a really good question and a good place to start with my introduction to concentration this morning. Because the truth is that concentration is an aspect of mindfulness. Many of us have been practicing a while with mindfulness, and although we may not feel that we've mastered it. Let's see. We have an idea of where to begin. We may even have a friendly relationship with it. I've been listening to a recording of the Buddha's mindfulness of breathing meditation. That's called Anapanasati Sutta in Pali. And this recording is by the Venerable Anālio, who is a monk and follows our Theravada tradition. Lindell on Monday night shared the 16 instructions in this breathing meditation, and she offered a guided meditation following that meditation, based on that meditation. So one part I like in Venerable Anālio's recording comes where he's preparing us to start meditating. And he says, "And being in the present moment, checking in with the condition of the mind as it is, we are in the presence of our good friend, mindfulness, our good friend, Sati." And each time he goes further in the meditation, he will start with the preparation saying, "We are in the presence of our good friend Sati." So I kind of like that. Makes me smile, and it's a good way to start a meditation. And it's a good way to start a friendly approach to concentration, too. Maybe some of you are like me, though. I was standoffish when I first approached constant concentration. After all, it was the eighth and last fold in the path, and although mindfulness was pretty familiar to me, mindfulness still wasn't easy. So I thought concentration must be really hard and really far away out there in the distance, and I'll get to that later, was my attitude. There was another aspect of concentration that kept me at a distance, and it was my associations with the word concentration. I associated the word with pushing myself and bearing down, as in, this is really difficult, so I have to muster all my energy to concentrate and figure it out. The third thing that kept me at a distance from concentration was the feeling of helplessness I felt frequently when my mind would be doing its natural thing, going in its scattered way here and there, but I thought I should be able to control it. I should be better able to control it and make it focus on what I thought was best. And it reminded me, some of you were here when we studied the ox herding pictures a few years ago, and there's a picture of the ox herder with his whip and the ox, and he's trying to tame it, and that's what it reminded me of. When I felt most helpless was when difficult emotions came up, and I'd get stuck going over and over the same solutions to whatever I thought the problem was, and I'd end up in a tangle of thinking. The dictionary defines concentration as the action of focusing one's intention or mental effort on one particular thing above all others. When difficult emotions arose, it was especially hard to still my mind. I believe that to practice with concentration, I should have more control over my mind and be able to still it when it was turbulent or even when it was just busy. So although in my worldly life I was good at concentrating on certain areas that were rewarding to me, like reading an interesting book or doing my French homework or practicing a new Qigong flow series or observing birds in the wild, I had a lot of trepidation when it came to concentrating in meditation. But my relationship to concentration is changing, and I'd say that the predominant quality of my relationship now is curiosity. And interest is a friendlier stance than being standoffish. So I hope that as we work through concentration this month, that we'll be mostly curious and interested, and we'll be discovering a lot, is my aspiration. Concentration is in the Eightfold Path. That kind of concentration is a special kind of concentration. Samadhi, as described by Bhikkhu Bodhi, is an intensified focusing on one particular thing above all others. And he says that the intention is all important, and that is what differentiates it from other kinds of concentration, like my concentration on French homework. The focus is inward, enabling the mind to be still and steady like a mirror, reflecting the object of awareness exactly as it is, without distortion or embellishment or projection, and without the veil of ignorance. This clear seeing enables the follower of the path to enter the last stage of the journey toward awakening. It's important to understand that concentration is necessary, definitely necessary, but it is not in and of itself the destination of the Eightfold Path, even though it is the last fold of the Eightfold Path. The Eightfold Path is the path leading to the cessation of suffering through penetrating understanding. And in order to end suffering, the capacity for concentration needs to join with all the previous elements of the Eightfold Path, starting with wise view and wise intention. Initially, Bhikkhu Bodhi says that wise view and wise intention, which are the wisdom, there's three sections of the Eightfold Path, and wise view and wise intention are the wisdom section. And then there's the ethical section, and then there's the mindfulness section. He says that initially, this first time we do the wise view, the wisdom in section, we're in a preliminary state, but now, after cultivating all the path factors, that wisdom section is elevated through our direct knowing and through renunciation of the defilements. So we reestablish our wisdom at the end of the path. Let's look more closely now at concentration specifically and how it's practiced in the Theravada Vipassana meditation. I'm going to point out some different sets of instructions for practicing the cultivation of mindfulness, and the cultivation of mindfulness and concentration, because they go together, because instructions can really be helpful. But before continuing with more details about Vipassana practice, I'll briefly describe the other concentration method, which is called Deep Absorption by Philip Moffat, and it's called Serenity Practice by Bhikkhu Bodhi. This other method focuses on achieving deep states of absorption by means of one-pointed awareness. And this is how it's done. First, an object is selected, and one keeps the mind on the object, fixed and alert. When the mind moves away from the object, one notices this quickly and brings the mind back to the object, doing this over and over. Our tradition notes that the levels of absorption reached by this deep absorption method still lack the wisdom of insight and cannot offer full liberation. Also, there's a problem of attachment to the very pleasant and tranquil states offered by this method. This is the method the Buddha was practicing and had mastered right before he became enlightened and before he discovered the middle way. He observed that this practice led in him to painful, racking, piercing, this is a quote, a painful, racking, piercing feeling due to striving, and that the contentment and tranquility didn't last. He said it didn't invade his mind and remain. And that's when he asked himself, might there be another way? And then he had an insight, which arose in his memory of a time from his childhood when he had entered an abode in the first meditation, which is the first jhana, the first level of concentration. He said it was accompanied by thinking and exploring with happiness and pleasure born of seclusion. I remember when I heard that sutta, unlike my first response to concentration, I thought, oh, that sounds nice. I think I might be able to do something like that. With Vipassana practice, the approach to concentration is that insight is the target, and concentration of the mind is part of the process the mind takes to get there. In both methods, concentration, Bhikkhu Bodhi says, there are four requirements. The first is an ethical behavior is required because it enables the mind to be tranquil and without regret. And it leads to stillness in the mind and the ability to reflect the truth of the way things are. Remember that mirror image? The ethical behavior contributes to the ability of the mind just to be calm and see things the way they are. The second requirement is renunciation of the defilements and hindrances. Not that you have to be rid of all the defilements and hindrances to start the process of concentration, because the defilements remain until enlightenment and the hindrances. So it is said of an arhat that what had to be done is done. The last veil of ignorance, including the last residue of defilement, has been abandoned, but not until that stage. So, you know, we can sit back and relax and be accepting of the defilements that we still have and the hindrances. They are going to be a part of our whole process, but it's how we work with them and how we understand them. That's part of the process, is suffering, and those defilements and hindrances are suffering. And that's part of what we deal with in all our meditation and life. So we just, concentration makes it easier to reduce the hindrances and the defilements. The third requirement is a teacher. We need a teacher or instructions, says Bhikkhu Bodhi. And the fourth requirement is we need a supportive environment. Bhikkhu Bodhi described that environment as a dwelling conducive to practice, which made me think of, oh, gee, I need my house to be a certain way to practice concentration and this form of meditation. I looked at the Anapanasati instructions, and the instructions in the Anapanasati Sutta, the supportive environment is described as going into a wilderness or the foot of a tree or an empty building. And I thought, I don't know that I can always do that either. The Buddha's right concentration instructions emphasize seclusion. One is secluded from sense pleasures and unwholesome states. That felt a little more accessible to me. And I thought of the Monday night talk that Suze and Lyndall gave at Sims. And in that talk, Suze talked about supportive environment. And I hope, I meant to talk to you about this, Suze, so interrupt me if you need to, because I'm just reporting it as I heard it, but I may have not gotten it quite right. She said that our founding teacher, Rodney, told her that she could find quiet anywhere, even a rock concert. And she said she would ask, where is the quiet? Wherever she was when she, so she says that's right. And she said that has changed her relationship to quiet. The supportive environment, and that's why I thought about this. I thought the supportive environment is about our relationship. With mindfulness of the present moment, it is possible to create a secluded environment that is supportive if we need to in many kinds of situations that might at first not seem too supportive. But we do need to ask the question, is this a supportive environment? And as Suze asked, where is the quiet? Or where is the stillness? Or where is the seclusion? But it might not have to be like an empty building, or it might not have to be going out into the mountains. So I thought that was important to go into. Now I'll go back to the requirement of the instructions. And that's what I'm going to spend most of the rest of the time on. With Vipassana meditation and the concentration aspect of it, the concentration is developed in over time, and I'll try to explain that a little more now. We have to break through strong conditioning, ingrained habits of the mind when we start meditating, and most of us need some help. We need some scaffolding or guardrails for guidance and to develop a kind of continuity of practice. In the Buddha's description of right concentration, he begins, secluded from sense pleasures and unwholesome states, the monk enters and dwells in the first jhana, accompanied by initial and sustained application of mind and filled with rapture and happiness born of seclusion. So when we practice with concentration, we seclude the mind in some way from what might distract it. And we sustain our practice of mindfulness over time. So this sustaining of the practice is really important. And we open to joy and contentment. There's a lot of joy mentioned in our practice of meditation. And we need to remember that. There are instructions also in the Buddha's Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutta. In that sutta, he directs us to four different objects of the mind to contemplate. The first object is the body. The second object is really multiple objects. It's the feeling tones of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. The third object is the mind itself. And the fourth object is the dhammas, sometimes called by other names like phenomena. Tuari and another teacher from Spirit Rock are offering a 5-month series on the Four Foundations beginning in January. And they describe the objects to be contemplated in the fourth foundation as patterns of phenomena shaping our perceptions. These dhammas or phenomena can limit or expand our freedom, take us toward liberation or away from it, take us towards awakening or away from it. The fourth foundation includes the following clusters of interrelated objects to contemplate. The first cluster is the five hindrances, which limit our freedom. And there's another one I talked about during my talk last month on mindfulness, and that is the seven factors of awakening, which take us in the direction of greater freedom. This fourth foundation seems to be particularly helpful for practicing with concentration. There are three other clusters of phenomena in the fourth foundation to contemplate, but I'm highlighting these two, hindrances and the seven factors of awakening, because as Bhikkhu Bodhi says, they are key to furthering or hindering our path to insight and eventually to awakening. The unification of the mind in its concentrated state makes it less vulnerable than the scattered state of the normal mind to hindrances like sensual desire, ill will, sleeplessness, restlessness, and worry and doubt. At the same time, the concentrated mind is strengthened by the seven factors of awakening as they are cultivated in this order: mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, equanimity. Mindfulness, our friend Sati, is the one quality that is present throughout the whole practice with the seven factors. And this last foundation of mindfulness unites mindfulness and concentration with understanding and wisdom. So remember that the purpose of Vipassana concentration is insight. The mind has to experience and understand suffering in order to end it. The hindrances represent our suffering, and the mind state of concentration helps stabilize the mind so that it can see clearly and know the truth of what is. Following through with the awakening factors deepens and intensifies the strength of the path to awakening. I'm going to give you one technique that I just discovered, trial and error, which is part of the way that we discover our instructions, you know, how we're going to scaffold ourselves when we meditate. There are many methods, and each of us will find what works best for us. All three of these examples, and four actually, because I'm going to give one of mine, are aligned with the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. And there are variations, but there is also commonality. So it's kind of a good idea, I think, to explore different instructions and see what are the strengths and what are the common aspects. So the one I'm going to give as an example is I didn't know it was something that would help me concentrate at all. It was that I went to the East Coast for a retreat, and it was a big deal for me. It was the first time I'd gone to the East Coast for a retreat. I had to pay for cat sitter. I had to pay for the airline ticket. I had to pay for the retreat. So I really wanted to make the best of this retreat. But when I arrived, I had jet lag, I was getting a cold, and when I started meditating, I kept falling asleep. I mean, I just kept falling asleep. And what was I going to do? I really had a sense of urgency. I knew the instruction was right effort. You don't really push hard, but I just felt I have to push hard. I can't fall asleep. So I had learned right before I left, and this was something that I think Sue spoke about already during some talk. I had learned this sentence from Munindraji, who was Joseph Goldstein's teacher. And his sentence was, sit and know you are sitting, and the whole of the Dharma will be revealed. So that was my intention. I wanted to have the Dharma revealed. And the technique was sit and know I'm sitting. That's what the instructions were. So I just sat down every time I was starting to fall asleep. I'd say, sit and know you're sitting, to myself, and the whole of the Dharma will be revealed. And then I reduced it. Sit and know you're sitting. Sit and know you're sitting. And then I just did, do I know I'm sitting? Yes, I know I'm sitting. Do I know I'm sitting? And I'd be, you know how you do where you're like this? And then I'd go back to, okay, no, I'm sitting. And I did that for about, I know I did it all one day. I might have done it 2 days. But into the second day, something happened. My mind did it and I didn't do it. Suddenly, my mind was alert. Suddenly, it was staying awake. And I felt a lot of sensations. I felt a lot of pleasure. I could not believe that I could just sit there and stay with the meditation and then go back and meditate more. And I thought, this wasn't supposed to work because I wasn't supposed to try. And I was really trying hard to stay awake. But there was just something that took over. And in my belief, those instructions are, that's what happens with concentration. It comes from meditating. It comes from sustaining your meditation. It comes from, and then it sustains itself. And then the joy and the contentment and, it just, the mind says, oh, this is a good place to be. But you can't make it happen. But you can be there. And you can follow some kind of instruction. And that instruction that I didn't know was an instruction from Munindraji, that helped me in that moment. So trial and error has a lot to do, I think, with our instructions with concentration. So I'm seeing that it's 11 o'clock, so I'm just going to mention these other kind of established instructions that I have found helpful. And the first one, Lyndall introduced people to on Monday night, and that's the Buddha's 16 instructions from the Anapanasati Sutta, mindfulness of breathing. He starts with preparing, and that's to establish mindfulness to the forefront. That's the first sentence. So like that's the intention. And then always attentive, one breathes in with mindfulness and breathes out with mindfulness. It goes on to focusing on the breath, but then it moves to breathing in, I experience the whole body. And that's a different sense. And it really is another step. And it does eventually end in concentration. And it as I said, it seems subtle. Like, why is that important? I experience the whole body. It's subtle, it's simple, but it's powerful. And then the next one is breathing in, I calm the body. Because for some reason, experiencing the whole body leads the mind to be able to calm the body. And then it goes on to experiencing joy. Well, breathing in, one trains oneself, I will experience joy. Well, when you're calm and present, it's a more joyful place to be. And this one I found in my practice with this was that when it said I will experience joy, I thought, well, I don't feel any joy right now. Where's the joy? I don't feel joy. I mean, that's a big, big thing, joy. But I, one of my teachers who was saying it said, any sense of joy in the slightest amount or just the intention to experience joy is important. And that was the subtlety thing, that as I kept doing it, I thought, oh, you know, I think there is a little joy there. Wow. And then the more I did it, the more I thought, yeah, that's joy. That's good enough joy. And then I puzzled over the difference between the next direction, which is I will experience pleasure. You know, like what's the difference between joy and pleasure? And why would you have both of those together? But as I studied concentration more, eventually in concentration, when you're going towards awakening, joy and pleasure are let go of. And the excitement of joy and pleasure, because you're going towards equanimity. So there is, you know, you do see the method here. And then it goes on to, I will experience mental formations. And so I thought, that's interesting. You go from pleasure to mental formations. But as I was doing it, the joy and pleasure help one deal with those mental formations, because those are all those thoughts, you know, and they go into emotions, and then they can be very troubling. So the development of the joy and pleasure and the calm help one step back a little bit and just experience those without being pulled away and distracted. So you can stay in your focus and alignment and your concentratedness, what are the words for describing concentration that Lindell kept talking about? I'm forgetting them now, where everything comes together, you know, when it's concentrated.
Collected and unified.
Yes, that's what it is. Collected and unified, right. And so anyway, after being able, and then you calm those because you're calmer, you can calm those mental activities. And then it goes on to the mind, and it follows really the Eightfold Path. So it goes on to the mind, and then it goes on to the Dhammas. And I will not go into any more because it's 11:06. So, and I'm not going to cover the other two, which are Philip Moffitt's Naturally Arising Practice Method, which is online you can look at, but it has a great arriving sequence and really can help with concentration in my mind. And the last one is Seda Utejaniya's practices, but I don't have time for that. So, what I thought we could do now would be to go into breakout rooms and for you just to talk about, you know, I talked about the way I felt about concentration when I first, you know, encountered it and kind of my relationship to concentration. And then if you have any instructions, any practices that you do that you find helpful, you could share those. Okay, looks like everyone's back. And before we have a little discussion, I just saw some messages that maybe not everyone had seen from new people. So Deepa and Randy said they were fairly new here and it was cloudy where they were. So I just wanted to share that with everyone. And Deggy said, hello, everyone. The word and sensation I describe for this short meditation this morning is the resistance. And Susie said, hello, everyone. Hi, Susie. I'm in Seattle and happy to be here. Grateful for the view from my apartment with some low clouds hovering over conifers and a faint view of the Olympics. I like that description. I would just say it's gray, but that's beautiful. So does anyone want to share anything that, Judith?
Yeah, something that I just came to my mind just at the end of our breakout group was that when I started meditating in other traditions, as many of you know, and these were mantric meditations, so the focus was concentration, you know, on the mantra. However, I soon discovered that I could think and repeat a mantra at the same time. I had no problem doing that whatsoever. And sometimes I just would let go of the mantra and I would end up in this kind of, I guess, mindful state is really what it was. But there was also this emphasis on other states of consciousness, right? And I really recognized that attachment to these states of consciousness. And so for me, it's been kind of freeing to get away from that, you know, from this focus on one thing. And so now it's kind of interesting to try to come back to it in a different way. Yeah, I don't know that I actually have a question, but that's what I was thinking about. Yeah.
No, I personally like hearing different ways and different experiences because we're, you know, it's all still interesting in the relationship, you know, to the what we're doing. Yeah. Anyone else want to share? Thank you, Judith. Suze?
I think Mike left. Mike, are you still here? Well, I learned such a good thing from, we were talking about the insights we've had, and he said the two important things is to recognize the insight and then to unpack it so that we really know what has come up. Because sometimes we think it's an insight, but actually it's just old thought patterns that we might have put a pretty bow on. And I remembered how Rodney used to say when you'd tell him an insight on retreat and he'd go, "That's great. And that's the same one you told me last year." So what are you doing with this? It's that unpacking, that learning from. And anyway, a big thanks to Mike for pointing that out.
Good point. Lyndall, go ahead.
Hi, Lauren. Thanks for your talk. And I appreciated your talking about the Anapanasati Sutta because I've been working with it too this month. You know, I knew about it, but I hadn't really practiced with it very much. And I'm really enjoying it. I'm finding that it's really that kind of emphasis on the breath a little bit more and breathing in and breathing out and kind of keeping the breathing in and breathing out going as you start to notice, you know, the joy or you start to notice the mental formations coming up. It's really helping me to keep my mind steady in a very relaxed and gentle way. So I think it's a nice, I like my usual way, you know, that we've all been taught about stay with the breath for a while, get to a certain amount of steadiness and then open up and then it's just steady attention as all these things come and go. That's a really good way to practice, but I'm also enjoying having more focus on staying with the breath to steady the mind. So I recommend it as something to try.
Thank you. Yeah, I recommend it too. And I think it's, we can learn a lot from different methods. I mean, we can see, you know, there's just so much. When I was reading about concentration and I really saw the path and how many layers and layers people go through. But then some people like, who was the power of now? Eckhart Tolle and different people, you know, they just poof, you know, that happens, but not for most of us. And there's just so much more will be revealed. And I know Rodney was saying recently that he said, we never stop learning.
Yeah.
He didn't, even if you're enlightened, you still go on learning. That's what he said.
Well, because Mara doesn't go away. You know, Mara didn't. Mara didn't go away from the Buddha.
No.
So the Buddha had to keep going, oh, I see you, Mara. What am I seeing? What is happening? What's my mind making of this?
Right.
That ongoing.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry for just jumping in there.
No, please. We have a few of us, and it's at the end anyway. I'm glad. It's a nice conversation. There's only 11 here, so. So anyway, well, thank you, everybody, for coming. It's good to see you. And we'll close now. Looking forward to the next talk. I mean, there's just so much, you know, it's so interesting. Mm-hmm. and so much to explore, like Linda was talking about. Yeah. Who knew? So let's see. The announcements. Well, January 5th, we're going to have a Refuges and Precepts with our guiding teacher in person at Sims at UFM and also online. So we do that every year. We take the Refuges and Precepts, and it's a very nice thing to do together in January. And then there is two Introduction to Meditation classes are starting, one with Carrie on January 22nd and one with Steve on the east side. So those are all on the website. And then at the end of January, our founding teacher, Rodney Smith, and someone said it was his last time to do a retreat. He's going to have a weekend Zoom retreat, and the title is Merging the Heart Sutra with the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, which should be really wonderful. And I would like to thank you for the dana that you contribute in person or in your volunteering or monetarily. Our Sims relies on volunteers and relies on the donations, as you know, so much appreciated your generosity. And let's just take a deep breath and think of our, reflect on our morning and the, what we've been doing with the Dharma, the Sangha, and the Buddha, and the merit of our time here this morning together, and how we can offer the merit to spread beyond us in time and space to all beings. May all beings lessen ignorance and increase their wisdom and compassion. May all beings be at peace.
Thank you, Lauren. Thanks, everybody.
Hope to see you next time or
thanks,
something.
Lauren.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you, Lauren.
Lauren, that was
thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.